This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and good morning. You are listening now to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial. Happy May Day. And I would like to start the show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. I'd like to acknowledge that sovereignty was never ceded, that I'd also like to acknowledge the elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respects to any First Nations listeners today. This show does its best to align with treaty, sovereignty, and First Nations self-determination when it comes to First Nations issues. And restitution. So I'm supportive of all those things and I want them to happen now. We'll go to our show tune and then we'll meet our guests for today.
Slums in some metropolitan centers are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush.
The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
Amy is a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, in case you didn't work that out. I am straight from the rubbish tip today, and I am your host, Amy. Today, we're going to talk about two things. We're going to chat about homeless issues, unhoused people's issues with the Homeless Persons Union. And then after that, I attended last week a public meeting in Geelong about the war in Iran that was held at the Maritime Union Australia's office, and I'm going to play an Iranian activist's thoughts on the war right now and how the movement, the workers' movement, can do solidarity to support the people in Iran and in Iran's sovereignty. So I thought that would make a nice May Day themed show. And yeah, so let's get straight into it. Before I do, if you haven't listened to this show before, this show is called Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. It's about challenging the way we live in the cities and suburbs. You know, we're all put into little boxes, you know, as the as the old song goes, little boxes, houses made of tiffy taffy. They put them in little boxes at university. They put them in little boxes to go to work. It's a world that makes us alienated from another. It breaks us up in community. And it turns us against each other when, you know, historically human society has been a communal society looking out for each other. You know, we live in very siloed off, alienated times. And one of the groups that are the most affected by this and are created by this system are the unhoused. So let's get to meet the Homeless Persons Union today. So I'll let you both introduce yourself. Do you want to start, Kelly? Oh, no.
I'm Lainey.
Yep.
I'm an older person. I'm technically homeless at the moment, but I have somewhere to stay. And I've been involved with the Homeless Persons Union of Victoria on and off since 2014. So, yeah. That's me.
Thanks for coming on the show today, Lainey.
Pleasure.
And now this is a voice I think 3CR listeners will be familiar with. Hi,
oh,
Kelly.
No, that's no good. Yep, g'day, everybody. My name's Kelly. I'm part of the Homeless Persons Union Victoria as well. Been around doing this since 2014, and we've just kicked back into gear because of the awful community safety officer program in the city of Melbourne, which is harassing our unhoused community there, moving them on from public spaces, moving them on from sitting and leaning against city buildings and for begging alms. So here we are. We're pretty hardcore in the middle of a campaign.
Yeah, if people remember last year, if they caught the show last year, I played a panel from David Border Giles and Kelly and others, Spike, organized on the criminalization of homelessness.
Yeah.
That was a great event. And I also had David Border Giles on the show to talk a bit about the event and some of the issues around this issue that you've just raised. So let's go straight into it. Let's talk about what Melbourne City Council is doing. But also, I know a lot of people already are familiar with it, but let's just give an overview just to get started.
Yeah, so this all kicked into gear because The Age reached out to us a few days before April the 11th to say that a former employee of the CSO program had contacted them claiming that he was fired because he shoved someone, an unhoused person in the city, but he said he was only acting on the orders of his training. He was only doing what he was instructed to do. He's kind of like a whistleblower, Joel Owen. He reached out to The Age, and he also claimed in that article that a number of pretty full-on things that even though they've got the name community safety officer, what they're really instructed to do is to stand around people and not leave until they move from a spot in the city. They're instructed in their training not to be afraid to use force against people, and also that they've been fudging their own data. So they've been often sent to quiet areas of the municipality like East Melbourne on a Saturday afternoon, and any interaction they have from the public, like giving out tram directions, was considered a significant encounter with the public. So it's kind of like manipulating, it is manipulating their data to seem more significant than what they really are. So there's a number of things that came out in that article, and that's what kicked off this whole campaign.
So it's such Orwellian doublespeak, isn't it, calling them safety officers, isn't it? And it's so like ICE, isn't it? Like in America right now, you know, we have these clad individuals harassing people on the streets, and something that I've been noticing and talking about is how there's been a subtle authoritarianism that's been creeping in these recent years. And I feel like people should be outraged. They should be horrified and disgusted that we have this sort of thing becoming acceptable, because this is quite scary to just have people doing this. It's very similar to what's happening in the US right now. Obviously, it's crazy in the US right now with ICE, but this reminds me a lot of that situation.
Definitely.
Because it's, you know, and it's, and those people are intimidating. They're dressed up. They're often men. They're much bigger. They surround a single person. They're in black, you know. It's quite scary.
It's a movement that's going on, you know, the criminalization of the unhoused, the criminalization of poverty, and this kind of hysterical concerns around safety. I don't know if you've noticed, there's this whole narrative around safety and who's safe and how can we be more safer.
Well, that's propaganda.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you watch the Channel 9 news any night and it's, you know, you would be frightened watching it because they're not leading with world stories or anything positive. It's always there's a machete attack here. And to hear it, you'd think we're not safe in our own homes. We'd have to, you know, I'm not saying these things don't happen, but the impression they give is that, it, you know, we're all living in danger and we need to be scared. And I remember that happening after 9/11 in America. People were staying in their homes. They were absolutely hysterical about going out. And I feel like, yeah, this is the sort of atmosphere that we're in at the moment.
And my parents are boomers, pushing towards their 80s, and they do watch the Nine News and they do feel unsafe.
Yeah, you would.
Crap that's on there.
Yeah, you would, because there's never any. Oh, there might be one, like, nice story towards the end just to bring you back to an okay mood.
It's a really serious issue of our time how entities like the Murdoch media empire, social media, which is controlled by very despicable human beings, has completely alienated us from one another. One example I give often is when I was working, I would have my phone, you know, kids and people in Iran or Palestine, Lebanon, in awful situations that flooding my algorithm because I was interested in the issue. So the algorithm creates and silos me into that algorithm. But my mate at work, AFL, sports bit, some manosphere stuff. And so what's happening there is a calculated way of siloing us. So I feel like the world's talking about Palestine, but actually it's directly siloing me into this algorithm. And then the person who wants to stick their head in the sand is actually being siloed into an algorithm that doesn't mention it, that probably has propaganda against the issue.
And can I speak to that when you finish?
Yeah, please, that's it.
Oh, it just reminded me, Amy, that and this is what the Lord Mayor of Melbourne, Nick Rees, has claimed when he went on ABC Melbourne on Thursday afternoon as a kind of rebuttal to us going on the day before. He said that the claims that we were making about officers we've had eyewitness accounts of them throwing people to the ground on their backs, from street cleaners being sicked upon people, a man being kicked as he was laying down in an arcade. He claimed that we were operating in an echo chamber and there's a lot of misinformation out there. That was his response.
I got off the train. I went to the football last night and as I was getting off the train, I got off at Flinders Street to get the tram to Jolimont because there wasn't a train. And the first thing I saw, I hadn't been to Flinders Street Station for ages, was 10 police and security officers surrounding one man. And I was really late, but I also wanted to be a witness to what was happening. Just the intimidation of just circling around this guy. I don't know what the situation was, but I hung around for a little while just in case anything went on that I could at least observe. And then the next thing I saw when I got off the tram was a homeless man just sitting on the bridge. And I stopped and spoke to him and asked his name and gave him the change that I had and told him that I was with the Homeless Persons Union. And he was so keen to have a chat. And I said, I'm rushing to the footy, but I'll try and find you on my way back to have a chat. And, you know, we hear so much about how people's mortgages are being affected, how people's rents are being affected. It's acknowledged that everyone is having a hard time, yet there seems to be no empathy at all for those that are right at the bottom of that situation, that are now unhoused with no prospects of getting houses, even if they're working, some of them, you know. And it's normal to gravitate when you're sleeping rough to other people to feel safe. And this is what's being taken away, that feeling that you're entitled to be in a public space.
Yeah.
It's cruel. It's very cruel.
And that's the thing that they don't talk about is the cruelty, the inhumanity. You know, we live in a media environment that does not cultivate empathy. It cultivates apathy.
Yeah, the city can be the last refuge for people.
And you have these beautiful recordings that you played at, you and Spike did, that you played at that criminalization of homelessness talk where you interviewed people on the streets, but you also are doing these wonderful videos as part of your promotion on your Instagram. And do you have Facebook as well? Facebook. Yep. I really love those. They're great.
We're going pretty hard on the comms. And we'll go out on, I think, Tuesday and try and speak to some folks in the city and get some audio recordings. Even if we can't find people that have had direct contact with the CSOs, we still want to ask people what they think about the idea, what they think about, like the council spending $3.75 million on this program. Well, how else would you like to see that money spent to help you? And why is public space important? We'll be asking people things like that, and we'll start publishing those in the lead up to our event and in time for the big council meeting on May 12th.
So we're just going to go to a short break, and then we'll be back after a few announcements.
The fuel crisis is putting growing pressure on our services and the people who rely on them. As prices for staples like oil and flour soar, donations are dropping, but the demand is rising. For thousands of refugee families with no government support, the Asylum Seeker Resource Center is the only safety net left. Please donate today at asrc.org.au. Together, we keep the net strong. The Asylum Seeker Resource Center is a 3CR supporter.
Do you care about older people's housing? Are you keen to talk to politicians and your community about why housing for older people is important?
Then become a housing champion with Housing for the Age Action Group. The Housing Champions program will train older people to talk about housing leading up to the Victorian election in November this year. For more information and to register your interest, go to Housing for the Age Action Group's website, oldertenants.org.au, or call us on 03 9654 7389.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence on 3CR Community Radio, and I am chatting with Kelly and Lainey from the Homeless Persons Union. So something I think media does not do is, as I was saying, it encourages us to be alienated and siloed from one another. And I how do we humanize and like bring empathy into these conversations and looking out for human beings who are homeless?
How do we as people bring empathy into conversations?
Well, into the media, you know.
Oh, well...
Give them names, talk to them by their names.
Yeah, storytelling is important. Lived experience storytelling.
Because that's really quite emotional. The stories we've heard of how people came to be in the situation they're in, there's some really sad... Well, every single story was sad. And you realise it can happen to anybody. You know, we're all just a couple of paychecks away from being homeless these days. Things are expensive, wages are low, inflation's high. And while the general public seems to be sympathetic towards mortgage holders and renters, they don't see the people that are a house unhoused as being part of the same,
yeah.
you know, financial situation. And, I mean, you've only got to go and look at a rental and there's 30 people there. And if you're a person that's been unhoused, you've got issues, you know, because you've been unhoused, you've got mental health issues, you may have substance abuse issues, although I object to that people being labelled that way. The thing is, even if they didn't have those issues when they became homeless, they have them after, because it's just such a hard life. And people get relief and peace any way they can.
I try and speak to as many people as possible, I think, just to show that there's a wide variety of people out there that really care about this issue. Yeah. That's what I do with my kind of media content creation.
I think it's really good.
Well, I don't know. I'm just going on instinct.
And that's great, because I think this is what we don't get. You know, we don't get those stories. We don't voice the voiceless. I mean, 3CR does, but you know, outside of 3CR, we don't voice the voiceless.
I guess they're motivated by different things, Amy. Like, their heart's not in it. Whereas we're motivated by like empowering people that are homeless. Like that's our number one motivation. So they're motivated by other things. And as a side thing, they might cover a story about homelessness, but they also don't have lived experience. So that's not an embodied thing for them. It's just another area of interest, like intellectual interest. Or a bit of obligation to cover like a social justice issue or something like that. So it doesn't ring true for people because it's just a mainstream journo doing a story. But for me, I've always thought like peer-produced media is like revolutionary and I'll stand by that.
Definitely. And if you've lived it yourself, you know, you understand the issues, you understand the fear. And one thing I became aware of the other day was that these safety officers carry handcuffs. I spoke to some security guards at High Point the other day. I was in the evening just going to Woolworths and they were sort of looking at me and they asked if I needed anything. I said, no, I'm just looking at what you've got on you. What do you carry? And they said, oh, we have a camera which we turn on if there's an issue. We have a radio and a phone.
Should be on all the time.
And
that needs to be accessible for any like public access.
He said they turn it on if they have any interactions with people.
So you have to trust their good nature that they do that. It's goodwill. What happens if they forget? Like, is there any police repercussions?
But they were actually really sympathetic when I told them what we were doing and shocked that they had handcuffs. He said, what are they for? I said, I guess citizens' arrests or something. And I thought, you know, if I'd been asleep and I got woken up and I see someone dressed as a cop standing over me with the handcuffs, I'm going to bolt. And that's not easy for me.
That's another problem
run.
With that program is they're calling it safety officers, yet they look like the military. And if they did any kind of research at all, they would know that people who have experienced trauma, the last thing they want to see is someone dressed like that. And it actually prevents people from interacting with services when they've got people looking like police standing around them.
Triggering.
I would actually encourage people, if they can safely do it, if don't put yourself in harm's way, but if you see these agents around someone, maybe whip out your phone. And just stand in and just say, hey, what's going on here? Just try and be a bit, try and help that person out.
Yes, that would be very good.
I'd do that anyway.
Yeah.
If I see a lot of police standing around a person, I ask them, like I remember once I was driving down, Nepean Highway, I think it was, and I saw the police with a trans woman at the tram stop. And I just pulled over. I just had an instinct to pull over because there was about five of them surrounding her. And she's obviously homeless. I just got out and said, I'm just here as a legal observer just to make sure you're okay.
Mm.
And they weren't happy, but they didn't move me on. I just stood there because I wanted to check that this person was going to be okay.
Yeah.
And Olivia Ball, sorry, Amy, Olivia Ball has said that encourage people to document these encounters and to contact her, because then that involves the date and the time of the incident, and the council can only act on complaints when they have those sets of data in front of them.
Yeah, and that is also, as someone who's been questioned by the police, how they gather evidence, dates and times are a big part of their evidence gathering, and it helps you to have them in terms of your case if you can record the date and time something happens. You just mentioned a trans woman. I know that in my community, the trans community, I'm a trans woman, in case people have just never listened to this show before. I'm not the most binary trans woman. I'm slightly out of the binary. But anyway, it's a big issue in my community. There's a lot of trans people I know who are couch surfing or in very dodgy sort of full share house situations, or sleeping in their cars. There's also rough sleepers, and I think that, you know, there's not very, for my community in general, there isn't very good data collecting, because we are relatively new for data collecting in terms of society's acceptance of us for data collecting. Like, you know, many studies about us are quite inconclusive because they don't have a history of studying us in the past. But I do know it's a big issue, and it's a growing issue. And I think that would, another thing, part of humanizing, because Spike was talking about this on the ABC, he was saying, you know, what we need to do is provide services to people who are struggling. You know, if the council's going to spend money, let's link them up to services. We've got to bring back public housing. We shouldn't be knocking down public housing for a start. But, you know, when you look at unhoused people, you get the full gamut of intersections of issues, whether, you know, it's alcohol and other drugs, whether it's being marginalized by your gender or sexual identity, or by, you know, whether you're a First Nations person or a person of color. You know, it's all these factors, you find it all there. And I feel like you really see the violence of the state against these marginalized people really heightened when it comes to the unhoused.
Yeah, and also for us in the union, it's like services, really important, but also people shouldn't be forced into using services. People still have a right to be in public space, irrespective of if they want to engage with a service or not. That's the real issue here. Like, people are allowed, if they're not hurting anybody, everybody's entitled to that public space.
Yes.
And you can't force them to go to, and we all know the problem with services, there's not enough services, there's not enough alcohol and other drug services. Yeah. So this furphy about them being linked up to services is BS. Like, they're not actually doing that.
Yeah.
And where is their public advocacy voice, like to state government, calling for more investment in affordable housing, in services? Like, that's what the city of Melbourne should be doing. They're like the capital city council, and they should have more of a public voice on these really important issues, and they're severely lacking in that.
One thing I do to people who don't like the unhoused in public spaces is, if they're like someone of a sort of liberal ideology, as in not the Liberal Party, but the ideology of liberalism, one of the core tenets of classical liberalism is a right to public space and a right to your own space, that every human being has a sort of entitlement to private and public space. So like the ABC loves liberalism. They have shows where they talk about it and stuff on the Radio National and stuff. And I sort of feel like, well, this should offend your liberal sensibilities, you know. Absolutely. that we're actually have this really authoritarian push to clinically control this public space.
Make it clean, make it tidy, You're spoiling the look of our beautiful city by just existing. We're going to take your things because they don't look nice on the footpath, and we're going to destroy them. Mm. You know, your ID might be in there, your sleeping bag, everything you need, possibly photos of your family, and they just throw them out. And when the homeless people inquire, how do I get my stuff back? You can't.
Yeah.
You know, and why not provide lockers? How hard would that be just to provide a locker for someone to put their things during the day so they can just carry a bag around the rest of the day, things like that. These are human beings. And they often have little animals with them too, which breaks my heart too.
They're treating people like roads, rates and rubbish.
Yes.
As local councils do. And you can't treat people like that.
And it's gotten bad since the last council elections because Labor made the single member wards a thing. So it made it harder for the more marginalised candidates to get in to council. So councillors across Victoria have become much more conservative. Where I live in Geelong, as soon as Mr. Conservative pro-businessman Stretch Contelge and his brother, they basically run the council now, him and his brother Eddie, he's mayor and his brother's deputy mayor. As soon as that happened on Packington Street at the Woolworths, where there was regularly people who are unhoused, you know, begging and stuff, all these signs went up saying no soliciting or loitering, soliciting monies or loitering. And it's just like they as soon as they came in, suddenly there was this cleanup. And I know they're interested in the City of Melbourne model. I know other councils are interested in the City of Melbourne model.
But Footscray Community Response have had, I think, a significant win because the Footscray Council has decided not to keep progressing their security guard agenda. So they've pivoted and now they're looking into a different model. And that's the pressure put upon them from the community and Footscray Community Response.
That's great.
That was a big win.
Who knows what they're going to do, but at least they're moving away from that damned security guard agenda.
That's awesome. And that's community power. That's getting together. That's
the community there are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, they organise really well. They engage with the homeless people. They know their names. Mm. They feed them. They speak with them. And this is... We need people on the ground who know these people's names, who know who they are and what's going on with them, and can treat them accordingly to what, you know, what they know is wrong, you know, instead of just being so punitive. It's degrading.
And Frankston had the security guard model like 10 years ago or something, and that didn't work. So now they have social workers and nurses who are out on the street in central Footscray. That's another good model to be looking at.
Mm. Yeah.
There are alternatives.
Mm.
And just quickly, we just recently did a survey, very small number. We interviewed people about what does stop them from engaging with services, and they actually said to us, if they were people like you, we would engage. You know,
that's awful.
You know, you're nice.
Yeah,
you know,
that's disgusting.
You're approachable. And they said that the services aren't open when they're awake, because often they sleep in the day so they can stay awake a bit at night and be with it and not be at risk. So services are 9 to 5. Homelessness.
Yes, there's no spaces for people
not
to
9 to 5.
We'd be calling on the City of Melbourne to do something about that.
Yes.
And also to employ people that are homeless to perform these tasks going
workers.
Out and helping their community. Let's empower people, not punish them. That just doesn't work. Also, it doesn't actually work.
No.
Lift people up.
Yeah, don't punch down. Yeah.
There's so much that they could do, Amy. They could have a positive vision and be leaders in this space instead of going down this path of trying to crush people and move them out of the city. It's actually just not going to work anyway.
This is just moving them to another place, you know, where they're not safe. It's just, I mean, as a woman, I'm not going to sleep, unless you've got a car, you're not going to sleep somewhere in a lane or a shelter on your own. You know, you're looking for light, you're looking for others, you're looking for that
to be seen,
safety and to be seen, and that someone will know if something happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Women have, I've covered this on the show before, but women have been leaders in community care because obviously because of women's work and the nature of that, and that's, you know, a gendered thing that is a big conversation in feminism. But I've talked about neighborhood houses earlier in the year, and I'm going to be visiting some soon. And they were started by women of the women's movement who wanted to look after women experiencing housing issues, domestic violence. And back then it was easier because they could afford to put money together, like 3CR, you know, did, and buy a building. And now you can't. But the fact that there's still these communities still finding ways to fight is so encouraging.
Yes. What else can you do?
Yeah.
You can't just watch.
Yeah, and it's awesome, and I really think you should be celebrated for doing that.
We'll celebrate.
I celebrate you.
We'll celebrate when we have.
I don't like seeing inequality. No. You know, I don't like certain people telling other people if they can and can't be in public space. That just offends me on a really basic level.
Mm.
And these people spend what money they have in the city.
Yeah.
You know, all their money is spent in the city.
Mm.
And that's not acknowledged. You know, they're just seen as troublemakers and criminals. And we know that they're more likely to be a victim of crime than anybody.
Yeah. Thanks. You know. Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you guys are beautiful. I love you guys. You guys are great. let's just run down how people can follow your work, where they can learn more and, you know, potentially support you. I'm part of your email list. Definitely encourage people to subscribe to the email list.
Yeah, we don't actually have can send us an email at hpuvic@gmail.com if you want to get on that list, and we don't spam people. But what I'd really probably lastly like to mention is that we have an event coming up on Tuesday, May the 12th. It's called the Big Lean.
Yep.
And we're all going to lean against Melbourne Town Hall in solidarity with our homeless community in the CBD, because these CSO officers are preventing people from leaning and sitting against public buildings and for begging alms. So we'll come out there in a show of force. Tuesday, May the 12th from 5 p.m. We'll have a DJ spinning some tunes. We'll have a bit of a festive but powerful atmosphere. We'll have a small open mic, so we encourage people to come, including sector workers to come, more organisational and institutional voices we need, not just activists and grassroots people on the ground. And then from 5:30 p.m. we'll head into the council building and give verbal submission about their draft budget to increase the CSO program to $3.75 million, increasing officer size from 11 to 22 people.
Yeah.
So we really love people to come to that. All Melburnians who really care about this issue, come on down and follow us on our socials.
And a little birdie told me we might be hearing more from you on 3CR in the future as well.
Mm. Yeah, so. Lainey, do you want to talk to that?
We're called Tuned In and Locked Out, the radio station will be called. And it's set at midnight, just my favourite time of the day. And is it a Monday night? Yeah, Monday nights. That's coming up.
When's that starting?
I think our first peeps will be trained in July.
Yep.
So I reckon August probably.
Amazing. As soon as that starts, I'll be promoting it on this show.
Oh, thank you.
You're good, aren't you?
And if you need help recording that event in May, let me know. I'm happy to bring the microphone.
That'll be great, Amy.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in again.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. We're going to go straight now to a speech from Iranian activist Ali Keshkar, who I recorded at the MUA offices in Geelong, just talking about how the broader left workers movement can support Iranians at the moment in the war, and how, you know, we're actually in a war right now, by the way. We're actually at war. That happened just randomly. We're in a war. Why aren't we talking about this? So we'll go straight to that. Thanks again for coming on. Enjoy Ali Keshkar. When he says AUKUS, he is talking about AUKUS.
Thanks, David. Our second speaker for today is Ali Keshkar. Sorry, Ali. And Ali is an Iranian. He was born in Iran and was actually locked up for several years and indeed nearly executed. He was just saying before that he accidentally got out, so was saved. But unfortunately, his brother was not, so his brother was actually executed. And Ali himself has lived overseas for many years in the Netherlands and Britain and now Australia. Ali is a writer. He's always been an activist and involved in politics in Iran and hopefully here today. So could you please welcome him?
Thank you very much for attending here, and thank you for organizer to invite me. I just would like to give you two acknowledge. First of all, I'm not very good speaker, but I'm very good writer. That is, and that's why my project has been elected as a shortlisted to Hazar Rory Literary Show. It's about my memory on the prison when I was waiting for the execution. But anyway, the second and important acknowledgement is about that we are living in a land that always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And that acknowledgement is very, very important. And tonight I'm going to make a bridge from this acknowledgement to the current situation in Iran. And what is the relationship between this acknowledgement that we are saying, we are seeing that we acknowledge that we are living in a country, that this country, the colonization of this country is a symbol and is a logic which is not been over, it's not been finished. Still, there are this knowledge, this logic of the colonialism. We can see in the Iran, in the Gulf, in the Gaza, in the Lebanon, and in the, all of the Middle East. And this fire of the this fire in the Middle East is exactly the first fire that was started here against of the Aboriginal and First Nation in Australia. So the question is that why we are speaking about the war in Iran, in Australia. There are lots of problems that we can discuss about it. There are lots of problems in the world that we can discuss about it. And why we should to focus on the problem and the war in Iran. I born in a city, which this city is named Shiraz. You know, you may know about the Shiraz vine, but this Shiraz is a oldest city, is about more than 4,000 years ago. And a city that 3,000 years ago, the first human rights declaration was issued by Cyrus, one of them, the first emperor of the Iran. And also this city is very famous with the important poetries which was famous in the world, Hafez and Saadi. And I would like to say something about one poem of the Saadi, which now is in using in the UNESCO and United Nations. And this explain about the humanity and say that the human beings all around the world is like a body. And if the finger, if you get a pain in your finger, in your eyes, in your hair, in your skin, then the whole of the body is pain. It's not just pain of the finger, it's pain of the whole of the body. So if we look at the world and look at the human beings, it's exactly the same. So It means that if we have a problem in the Gaza, it's not a problem that is related to 1,000 kilometers of sun from us. It's about a finger of a body. So the pain in Gaza, the pain in Middle East, the war in the Middle East, and the war in the Iran, and the bombard of the, for example, children in school in the MENA. It's not just simple event which is happening in the another world. This is an important message of this poetry, is that if you believe that if you don't care about the problem of the other part of the world, so you are not human being anymore. Because human being is a body, and is a body with all of the elements. So this is the reason that now we are talking about the war. But of course, the another important things I think is that you may say that we are sitting here in very lovely and nice cities in Chile, near the ocean, and we are very far away from the war in Iran. But I think, no, everyone in this room, they've been participated in this war. Every single of the person in this war, they've been participated in this war. How? You vote to the government, which govern that they govern AUKUS, and with the AUKUS, they pay $1 million to the USA, and USA buying bomb with these dollars, and then dropped it in the people, and then shooting to the schools of the MENA and killing the children, and they bombard and they make genocide in the Gaza. So you vote. I know that you not made vote. I mean that Australia vote. And if Australia, then if the AUKUS is not the Labour Party's AUKUS, the AUKUS, every one of Australian is AUKUS. So the another thing is a tax. You pay tax, and this money that you pay to tax, of course they're using for such a war. So without your willing, you've been participated in the war. Without your being. And of course, I'm gonna say that you are the luckiest and you are the most important and I think very human being persons to be here, because you come here to say that I'm not part of the AUKUS, I'm not part of the Labour Party, I'm not part of the war. I am against of the man. That's why I don't go to the beach, I don't go to the anything. I came here to show my solidarity, to show that I'm against of these policies that the government is abusing from me and abusing from my task and from my money and etc. And that is a good point. And that is exactly what the sadists say, that human beings is a whole of the human beings is a body. But another important thing is, what is the problem actually in it? Why this war is happening? Of course, there are a lot of politicians which they say we are against the war. If you look at, for example, Biden, European Union, Macron, even Albanese, and if you ask to Albanese or Peruvian that, what do you think? Do you want a war in Middle East or in the Iran? They say that, of course, they are against of the war. Yes, they may write, they are against of the war, but they are not against of the logic of the war. The logic of the war which is the logic of the colonialism, which is the logic of the imperialism, which is the logic of the capitalist system, they are completely not against this. And yeah, we heard that, for example, a report from New York Times that Trump was manipulated by the Netanyahu, and it was missing some wise men. There were not wise men in the decision room, so it was a mistake. But completely not. It is part of the structure of the imperialism. And when we're talking about imperialism, imperialism is not just a simple word. Imperialism is a function. It's a function. It's an allied function. As a function that working against humanity and for the benefits. So, but as I said, this logic from colonization in 200 years ago against the Aboriginal and First Nation in Australia still is working in Middle East. And this war actually also, there may be a lot of reasons for this. For example, the oil, regime change, or, for example, we want a democracy and human rights for people in Iran. And we know that nothing about this. The important voice is domination. They want to be a hegemony of them. And the hegemony and the imposing the political power in that region is very important for them. That's why they started by, for example, here in Australia also. So they came for the hegemony. That's why the Trump said that, we're gonna just this night is gonna be, for example, the whole of the civilization is gonna be destroyed. We're gonna be finished, the whole of the history. We're gonna bring you to the Stone Age. Why they say this? Because he is, as a symbol and as a logic of the imperialism, he's going to say that imperialism is alive with this logic, with the logic of the domination, with the logic of the imposing political power to use then, the second step then is using the oil, the geopolitics, the other things. But now, this war is important war against of the important task of the imperialism in this region. So this war is not, as I said, is not just a war that, for example, Iran is involved in. This is war of the every one of you in here also. And you are also a part of this international struggle against imperialism. And another point is why this region is very important, why Iran is so important. Of course, now we know that what happened, for example, right now, the first thing that we are facing, that the oil prices in everywhere, in Australia, in Europe, in Asia, in Japan, in everywhere, is rising. Now we clear that what's happening there. That it was something happened. That is, when the oil prices is rising, it means that we're looking at the nature of this. Because actually, they say the trade, the free trade area, they showed, so Iran has no right to control the Strait of the Hormuz. And with this, but of course, that means that they denied and they ignored the rights of the Iran for this. As you know, that if you travel across the Australia, you have to pay a lot. In most of the area, you have to pay. You have to pay to cross the road. So they ignore these rights and they get profit. And the profit was the lower oil prices. And now you see the higher prices. And so that is mean economically, it is important. And also I think it's not just economically, geopolitics is also important. Iran is a bridge between West and East, between South and North. It's a very important area. And that's why the fighting for the political hegemony and power hegemony in this region, it was very important, because anybody who has this area, then they have the world. And of course, from the 18th century, from the after the Industrial Revolution, the Iranian, the Iran, and also the Strait of Hormuz was under the control by the first Britain and then the USA. And after the revolution in 1978, then it's been changed. And it's then after for more than four decades, the struggle and all the problem, war, sanction, blockade, everything, every political and economical problem that we face it in this area is because of this, because they lose in 1978 revolution, they lose their control of the Hormuz and the control of the Iran and the hegemony of the Iran. And that's why now it's important. It's important for USA and also against of the China. It's important also for European Union against Russia. It is important for Israel against of the for the great Israel and against of the Middle East countries. So it is a crossroad, which I call it, is a anti-imperialism and imperialism crossroad, and very important crossroad. Okay, and then I think the struggle of the, you know that I was the opposition and I was against of the Iranian regime, and for that reason I was in prison under the execution and etc. But I think still the problem that I have with the regime is completely different than the problem that the US Israel have with the regime. We have in completely two different fronts. I'm fighting against of the neoliberalism policies which the Iranian regime is imposed to the Iran. I'm against of the policies which these policies is the policies the same of the policies of the imperialism. So I'm against of these, but my struggle is completely different from the US and Israel struggle. But I think this struggle against the US and Israel is not just Iranian struggle, it's also related to the Gaza and Palestinian. That's why I think Iranian people never ever could be free unless the Palestinian will be free. Without the free Palestine, we don't have a free Iran. And without free Iran, we don't have it. This area is related like a chain between each other. But in the last, I would like just to friendly criticize the left and trade unions. I know that in Australia, the most of the political left organization and also trade unions, they have a very strong statement and position against war, but it was just in the paper. Mm-hmm. It wasn't happen in the streets. And unfortunately, I don't know why such a pacifism is being occurred not just in the trade union, also in the left organization. And that's why I came here to say that why If you are agreeing even in the paper, why you not mobilizing? Why you not organizing the mass demonstration against of this? I can't agree that you, for example, we can't do that and etc. Because I know and I have seen the possibility of the, for example, Victorian leftists and trade unions in the pre-Palestine movement. You bring it 100,000 people in the Melbourne. You bring it 200,000 people in the Sydney. So you can do that, but you have done nothing. And you just satisfied with the position in the paper. And I think that is not enough. In a very important moment that we're facing to the serious war and struggle against imperialism, we need your solidarity. We need everyone's solidarity. And it's not just solidarity, because when we say solidarity, it's just empathy. It's my struggle. It's your struggle. That is my point. Thank you.
We're going to have to finish there. I will upload that on today's episode on the 3CR website and podcasting platforms. We're now going to go to some May Day music while Think Again gets set up for a special working May Day episode. So that's all for me this week. Follow the show at Kill Your Lawn at 3CR on Instagram, or email me at kyf@proton.me. And Lainey just told me that she was basically brought up by two trans women who were in and out of prison when she was growing up. So that's an amazing story just to learn as a trans person and a bit of trans history. All right, so what are we going to play? We've got a song here called Working Class Woman by Barbara Dane. Let's go with that.
Joe, working man's wife. That's how I was defined, as if that was my life, my hope and my mind. But I worked in a big shop, did the housework at night. There was no time. Time there were babies, had to make us a home. Joe was working two jobs, I was always alone. I needed some time and just a little control, just to keep my to try to stay whole. I wanted a partner to be his friend, not just his wife. I'll work hard for my children, but they're my love, not my life. In a factory, and it's rough in this world. My kids are in high school. Don't you know the boss calls me girl? But the woman beside me, as we sweat out the lane, says tomorrow. It's a race for the strong, 'cause it'll grind up the meek. When your money runs short, long about the end of a week, and your car needs some tires, working class woman. Hey, that's that old kind of blues. This system bypass, but you must. Gotta look to the source. I think me and this system about to get a divorce. I can't make enough money. I can't find enough time. But I'm a hard worker. More where I come from, we got anger to burn, but we're talking and moving, we're gonna study and learn, build a unity chain.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.